Hi, everyone. I'm Andy.
And I'm Allie.
Welcome back to another week of Marianne and Wanda, your favorite media and book club podcast.
Indeed. And what a week it's been, huh?
It's been a week. I'm ready for the weekend.
Me too. It's almost a Mardi Gras mobile. And on Sunday, my friend Cassie's going to have us all over and we're going to have a little brunch. And then we're going to go to the Joe Kane Day parades, which is always exciting. So
is Super Bowl not really a big thing down there if it coincides with Mardi Gras?
I mean, I assume it's still going to be a big thing, but I don't care about the Super Bowl, so.
Yeah, I just go for the food if we are invited anywhere.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. I mean, yeah, like none of my friends watch football, I don't think.
Yeah. Not really, not any of mine do either.
Yeah. Plus, like, the Super Bowl is, like, 90% ads, and I've started getting really fed up with the amount of advertising that's thrown at us all the time on, like, everything. Like, have you been on Snapchat recently? I didn't mean to bring this up, but have you been on Snapchat?
No, I pretty much don't use Snapchat anymore. I might have even deleted the app. Okay. I don't remember. I just don't use it.
They've like changed the whole thing, and like between every single person's story that you watch, it'll show you an ad, and like between every single like their stories, you know how you can watch like the People magazine mm-hmm. ones and like flip through mm-hmm. they'll have like 3-4 ads in there, and like I'm kind of fed up with it, so I don't think I'm in the good place for the Super Bowl right now.
That's fair.
Do you know who's doing the halftime show?
Usher, I think.
Oh, maybe I'll watch that then.
I think it's Usher. I don't know if he has any guests or not.
Usher confirms that there will be surprise guests.
Oh, okay.
Don't know what that means, but...
Well. Okay. I don't know if I'll be eating any Super Bowl Sunday food. Maybe I'll just get some at the store and just eat it, but not watch the Super Bowl.
Do that. Watch something else.
Yeah. Other than that, I got tickets for a concert at Bridgestone, this weekend, but next weekend.
What concert?
That'll be exciting. Disturbed and Falling in Reverse.
Okay, I have no idea who those people are, but I'm excited for you.
You probably have heard some Disturbed songs. They're like, I would say a hardcore rock metal genre, so.
Down with the Sickness.
Yeah. You would know that one, probably.
Yeah, sure.
I'm mostly going, though, because I like Falling in Reverse, and I saw them at Warped Tour a couple of times a few years ago in college. Yeah.
A few years ago, Andy, that was like a decade ago.
Okay, yeah, it was like 10 years ago. Okay, anyway, but that'll be next weekend.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah, I hope so. I got tickets in the suite again.
Ooh.
I tried to get the tickets down in the lower bowl part, but... I requested those, and they gave me the ones in the suite instead, so I don't know what that means.
I don't know either.
Probably means I'm not important enough to get good ones.
That's okay.
So, if anybody has any good recommendations of new restaurants that are close to Bridgestone Arena, let me know so we can go try something out beforehand.
Yeah, do something new.
Yeah. I heard there's a new sushi place down there that's really good, so we may do that.
Ooh, I've been wanting sushi for a while now.
Yeah.
So I would
I'll let you know if it's good.
Yeah.
All right. So we are starting with the first short story in our new short story series. And mm-hmm. the series is called Awayland. And it's a collection. I think there's 11 stories in Awayland. And it's by Ramona Ozabel.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into it. Let's see. Ramona Ozabel. You did the background on her, so I'll let you go ahead and start with this.
Yeah, and I read an LA Times review, and then I also watched her read, actually, the story that we read today, I watched her read on a Politics and Prose book reading that was on YouTube.
Hmm.
So I can't actually confirm that it is Ramona Ozabel. That is how you say her last name.
Okay.
So there's, like many authors that we've covered, there's not a ton of info about her, but I do know some things.
That's okay, though. It's good to put a spotlight on the lesser known authers.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like, unless you're, I don't know, like, Stephen King, there's not going to be, who's been around for ages and written a million books.
Right.
There's not always going to be a ton of info about you anyway online. So she grew up in Santa Fe, New Mexico, And she got an MFA from UC Irvine, where she won the Glenn Schaefer Award for Fiction, which is, yeah, just like a big prize at UC Irvine. So she's widely recognized, I guess, at this point. Because along with that award, she also got the Penn USA Literary Award for Fiction and several others. And she's been featured in most major literary magazines. So like, you know, big names like The New Yorker, Tin House, NPR's Selected Shorts, and then, of course, the Oxford American.
Yeah, I want to make note real quick that the book that we are reading in was published in 2018, but a lot of the short stories she wrote earlier, and I think it was The New Yorker, was the one that the story we read today was featured in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it makes sense. It's a good story. In addition to publishing, she's also gotten into teaching. So in the past, she's taught at the Tin House, the Institute for American Indian Arts, and Bennington College. And she's currently an assistant professor of English at Colorado State University. She's married with two children. I have no information about any of those family members. Other than when she was doing this book reading, they were asking her about sort of her inspiration for some of these stories, because there are, like in the book we read today, undertones of Greek mythology. And she says that she likes to read those to her two children. And she's since realized that sometimes she needs to edit out parts of the story because Greek mythology gets like pretty dark and pretty twisted sometimes.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, just kind of funny. So she has, in her time so far, written three novels, including two short story collections. So her debut novel was No One Is Here Except All of Us. She also wrote A Guide to Being Born, Sons and Daughters of Ease and Plenty, A Wayland, which is what we chose for our series. And then she came out with a book, I think it was in, I want to say 2019, called The Last Animal. That's her last one. And she says that since she's become a mother, she, you know, she's always loved writing, but she has struggled with finding long blocks of time where she can sort of like think about her novel and really sink into the story and focus on that. So she's found that she has to revisit and sort of do like shorter stints of writing instead of what she's done in the past. Mm-hmm. But the benefit to a short story collection like this one is that she, you know, can focus on these shorter stories that would take, you know, a month or two versus a year or two to write.
So. Right. Yeah. Understandable. Yes. Children are a lot.
Yeah. As you can attest to, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we said, the short story collection is called A Wayland. The collection was published in, we think, April of 2018. I do have the hard copy of the book and it just says 2018. So month is okay. Confirmed, but that's fine. And it you said it does have a very recognizable cover. Part of the reason why I picked this one, I will admit, I did like the cover, mm-hmm. but I did do some research on it, and it was very highly reviewed. So it's got what we think, you think it's a stag on the front?
Yeah, what do you think it is? So I think it's a stag and a hare running in opposite directions.
Definitely a hare.
Okay.
I don't know if that's a stag. To me, it looks like a greyhound dog with antlers.
Well, greyhound dogs don't have antlers.
I know. I mean, I guess it's, I would say more of a just a regular deer though. A stag, I think of like a almost like an elk. Maybe that's not,
well,
right,
I mean,
though.
But a stag, yeah, it's just like any male deer that has antlers. So,
oh, okay.
I would think it's like a smaller one. Yeah, I don't think it's like a big old elk, but
yeah.
Regardless, it's a very recognizable cover. And in the book reading that she was doing, she actually had a sweater that had the same pattern. So it had stags and deer and hares all over it. It's really nice.
Hmm.
But I don't know which came first, the sweater or the book. So don't ask me. One of the things that she talked about in this reading was that when she started to write this book, she and her husband were going to take about a 6-month long just worldwide vacation and write a nonfiction book about trying to have a child in like our current world, you know, which is, she was thinking about things like climate change and the political climate and whatnot and how that would influence children. And so she'd started to interview people, and then she realized shortly after that she's just like not cut out for nonfiction. Yeah, understandable. And she said she felt like a failure and had considered like alternative careers such as opening a popsicle stand or becoming a midwife.
Those are two so wildly different things.
I heard that too, and I was like, okay, popsicle stand, I understand, but midwife feels like a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
But then she started to write these short stories, which is essentially a fictionalized way for her to achieve the same sort of goal. And the first story that she wrote is one of the last ones. It's about the animal mummies. And she actually, it's funny to hear her talk about this, because she'll be like, yeah, like, I was in, I think at this point she was in Egypt, and there was like a room in the museum or whatever, and they were looking at all these mummies, and then you walk into another room, and there's all these animal mummies, and there was a plaque in there that was like, the mummies would like to thank, and like listed a whole bunch of donors, and she was like, well, I wonder what these animals would actually do if they could. And she says that she tries to marry sort of the fantastical, mythological world with the world we live in now, which I think really comes through in this story.
Yeah, I think so too.
And then I don't know, so I listened to the audiobook. Do you see the subdivided sections in your copy of the book?
Yes.
So is it just like a page that starts that says like Bay of Hungers and then the story is on the next page?
No, it's broken down almost into like, you know how plays are broken down by scenes or mm-hmm. act one, act two? It's kind of like that, where it's okay. listed out as like Bay of Hungers is like the title of the first act. And then it has the first three stories, which is You Can Find Love Now, Fresh Water from the Sea, and Template for a Proclamation to Save the Species. All three of those stories are in that first act, I guess, called Bay of Hunger. Okay. So she kind of has it broken down like that.
And she said that she tried to sort of group them by theme. So, for example, Bay of Hungers has to do with the hunger for love and home life. The next section is Cape of Persistent Hope, which is wishing for the impossible and then possibly attaining it. Lonesome Flats, which discusses different forms of loneliness, and then the Dream Isles, which are the dream of mummified animals and dying men.
Those are something.
Yeah. So I actually think I listened to the second story after I listened to the first one, so I'm probably just going to listen to the whole collection. So
I read the one that we read today, and then when I was trying to pick which one I want to do next, I started reading, I think it was the very last one.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wasn't feeling it, so I picked another one and started reading some of it. Some of them are very dark.
I mean, it makes sense that some of them might be dark if she's like trying to think about climate change and everything bad that's happening in the world. But
yeah, all of her explanation of what she intended when she was writing this definitely shows through. Like, there are lots of ties to Greek mythology and the New World, so like that definitely makes sense. There's the one of the stories I started reading was about a woman getting a hysterectomy and stuff like that, so like it definitely has ties to like bringing children into the world too. Anyway, but I did pick this book because it had recommendation or it had reviews that said it was very funny. And I'm not sure I totally agree with that yet, but
well, I mean, the story we read was pretty funny, and I think that, I mean, she said that she likes to think of the world through through humor, and we'll have to see how the rest of the stories are. But
all right, so the first story that we read is the first one in the collection, and it's called You Can Find Love Now. Do you want to read your lovely synopsis?
So in the first story, we follow an unnamed Cyclops as he attempts to develop an online dating profile using the definitive guide to doing so. Should he talk about his last connection who ghosted him, or maybe his self-esteem issues? How do you convince a woman that living in a cave in a volcano that is for sure more famous than his brothers, do not worry, is ideal?
That sums it up pretty good.
Yeah. And it was pretty quick. I think like the audiobook was maybe like 10 minutes or something.
Yeah, I think it was like 8 or 9 pages in the book.
Yeah.
So pretty quick. My first note is that this was very fitting since we just watched Shrek, but I was imagining that this would be Shrek's response to being on an online dating site. Like, the Cyclops just wants to keep to himself. He's got dark humor. He's a little insecure with his looks, except for his eye. And I was like, man, this is Shrek all over.
Yeah. I think the only difference is that Shrek would never actually be looking for love.
Right, yeah.
But if he were, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this is it.
Yeah.
What did you think of some of the tips that were given here?
So, I don't know. I thought they were a little outdated, and it almost, to me, the prompts almost read like, if you were in your 50s signing up for a dating site. So to me, it didn't seem like it was a dating site that was for the younger generation, because I don't feel like the prompts that you would see on maybe like Tinder or other dating apps would be like this.
Yeah, I think this would definitely fit more in like an eHarmony situation.
Yeah. Match.com.
Match.com, yeah.
Yeah.
She said that when she was writing it, she got the inspiration because she was thinking about some of her friends who were actually trying to do this, mm-hmm. and their experiences. And then she actually pulled a lot of those prompts from an actual guide that had been published.
Hmm.
And I was listening to some of them and I was like, well, yeah, I mean, like, it makes sense not to talk about like your exes or whatever in your profile.
Red flag.
Yeah. Huge red flag. I don't know.
Something I thought was notable is that this story, there is no dialogue between the Cyclops and another person. It's just his inner monologue of him filling out all these questions or all these prompts on the dating site. So uh-huh. That was interesting that there was not any dialogue throughout.
Yeah, but it was, you could hear his voice, which was nice.
Right, yeah. No, that was nice, but it's just not very often that you see stories that have zero dialogue in them.
Yeah, that's true.
Out to me. And it was funny that Cyclops 1 through 14 was already taken. I took that to mean that there are at least 14 other Cyclopses on the dating site.
You could be right about that, but you could, like, 15 could just be a notable number to him. You know, like, my Instagram handle ends in 17. And actually, I don't really know why it is. It might just be because that's the year I graduated college. I don't really know. It doesn't matter. Necessarily mean that, but I do like the idea that there are 14 other Cyclopses out there trying to find love.
Yeah.
I like to think at least a few of them are his brothers.
Yeah, probably so.
I laughed out loud when he said that his volcano was more famous than all his brothers, because I was like, I don't think that's exactly going to entice any woman to join you.
Yeah. Do we think he lives under Mount St. Helens?
Maybe.
He's in Washington State.
You're right. I had, in my mind, I just assumed it was Mount Etna because I was still in Greece, but Mount St. Helens would make a lot more sense.
Well, he said he grew up in Sicily. I don't know where exactly Mount Etna is, but
I think it's in Sicily.
Maybe that was his brother's volcano.
Interesting.
I did catch that it said he moved to Washington State because he likes the fog and the rain. I'm like, okay, so is he a vampire?
And that just like might help him blend in more, you know?
Right, yeah. So I think maybe he lives under Mount St. Helens or one of the other, I don't know how many other volcanoes there are in Washington State, but that's the only one I know of.
No, it's got to be that one.
Yeah. So I thought that when the Cyclops was answering the prompts, I thought his answers were very blunt with little emotion.
Uh-huh.
And not that that's a bad thing, but it did make me laugh that some of his answers were just like so cut and dry.
Yeah. I remember what the prompt was, but whenever he started discussing his last connection online, and then the prompt immediately after that was like, don't discuss your exes. And he was like, oh.
Never mind.
Yeah. Mix that. That was really funny.
What did you think of his counter where he says, you could choose other men, but you could choose me. Or he says, choose me if you want someone to hold you above his head in the moonlight and bite your wrist until the first rust comes out.
Sounds like he's into some kinky stuff, Andy.
I put absolutely not. Like, no, thank you. I want no part of that.
Yeah. I don't know about being picked up in the moonlight.
I don't know about being bit.
That's funny. I mean, like, I think he's got a lot of red flags. I think one of them is when he was talking about his preference for women and the way he just kept saying, like, girls who. And I was like, my dude, you got to be, I mean, you're hundreds of years old. You're looking for a woman, not a girl. Like, don't infantilize us.
Yeah.
I don't know why that bothered me. I'm sure it was a choice, but.
Yeah. Well, and again, that's just another example of him being very blunt. Like, I want this type of girl, that type of girl. I like this girl, that girl. Very blunt and no emotion, which he's still answering the question, but like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
Put some thought behind this.
What did you think of his eye doctor story?
I mean, funny, but also like, ooh, red flag.
Yeah, he's stabbing somebody's eye out and he has no remorse for it. Like, come on, dude.
Yeah, so I was a little confused when he was talking about that because to me, I was getting the impression that he wants somebody to come live underneath the volcano with him, just kind of have a quiet life to themselves. And he even says in the end, like, you don't have to introduce me to your friends. You don't have right. to take me out anywhere. You don't even have to see me with the lights on. And so then to hear that he's going out to the eye doctor, I'm like, okay, is this somewhere that a Cyclops is like a normal part of society? Or because like if I see a Cyclops, I'm probably gonna have a reaction that's like crazy. So I was trying to figure out, like, is he part of society or is he like hidden?
Oh, it sounds like he is part of society because he says that he, one of my favorite quotes was, I teach online English classes, not to get paid, but because I like to feel smarter than someone else. I teach all the classic books except the Odyssey.
Yeah, that little blurb sounded a little arrogant to me.
A little. It was funny, but yeah, like, come on, dude. It's so funny, though, for him not to teach the Odyssey. Like, I guess that brings up too many bad memories for him.
Yeah. I remember the Odyssey from high school, but not super well.
I guess the part that he's referring to specifically is when Odysseus, the whole crew of his men into a Cyclops cave, and the Cyclops eats all of his men, and then Odysseus escapes by convincing the Cyclops that he's nobody and stabbing out his eye.
Oh.
So, like, understandable why a Cyclops wouldn't want to bring that up.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. But I didn't like whenever he said, like, you never have to introduce him to anyone. Like, that should be a red flag, too.
That might be a self-esteem issue, though. Like, he just feels like he's not good enough because he doesn't look like everybody else.
You know? How can you love somebody else if you don't even love yourself enough to be around people?
That is the golden question.
Yeah.
I thought Ozabel's writing was definitely a little kooky. A little kookier than I was expecting.
You didn't think it was super funny?
I mean, I thought there was funny aspects to it, but overall, I think I anticipated that it was going to be like start to finish and just more than it was. But okay. I mean, I still liked it a lot, and I did think it was funny in some parts.
Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite quote from the whole thing was, "My father is the god of the sea, so we can guarantee good weather on our honeymoon cruise." This is a plus to dating me.
Yeah, huge plus. Never any bad seas.
Yeah.
I guess unless Poseidon's mad at him for some reason.
True. Maybe he doesn't approve of his bride.
Yeah, and that would be a mistake.
Yeah. So my overarching question after reading it was, do we think that Mr. Cyclops is looking for a human partner or another form of a creature partner?
When I was reading this, I assumed it was like a woman, especially since he was talking about like girls and not having to introduce him to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What did you think?
I initially thought that too, but then at one point he talks about how his father, the god of the sea, like washed up girls to him before for him to like take care of and I guess nurse back to health or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Said, I don't remember the exact phrase, but it was something like, when women washed up to sea, tailed or otherwise. And so I like maybe I thought, well, maybe he's into mermaids if they're tailed.
Fair.
So I was like, I don't know, maybe he's looking for another, because like a Mrs. Cyclops might be used to the lifestyle of living underground, but maybe he likes people with two eyes. I don't know.
Maybe. I'm also trying to think, and I don't know that there are female Cyclops in Greek mythology.
Oh, I never thought about that.
So I think they might all be male.
How do they all reproduce?
They all come from Poseidon.
How is there a second generation?
I don't think there are second generations.
He said he's in the second generation. The first generation were forgers. And then the second generation, he said we're like thugs or something like that.
You're right. I do. But I think that that's like the time period, like the first round of Cyclopses that came out, and then he's part of round 2.0. And online is saying that there are no female Cyclopses in Greek mythology.
Oh, okay.
You know,
because I noticed that he had brothers, and it never mentioned he had sisters, so that checks out.
Yeah, I guess at least he can't find one of his own kind.
Yeah. I wonder, I can see a mermaid partner.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I don't know that a mermaid could live under a volcano, but...
Just have to make her an in-ground pool.
Now we're really thinking.
Maybe it could even be like a hot spring.
Oh, yeah. Comes from outside, flows into the volcano. She can leave when she wants. That sounds nice, actually. How do I sign up for this?
How do I tell Mr. Cyclops that I'm a matchmaker?
Yeah. Would you date this Cyclops if you came across this profile and you were single?
That would be a hard swipe to the no. Is it left is no or right is no?
Left is no.
Hard left.
Yeah, fair. I think I would do the same. I think there's way too many red flags.
You lost me when you asked if you could bite my wrist. No.
You know, and Isabel, when she was talking about the story, she was like, I feel like he's not the creepiest guy on the internet. And that's fair. There's a lot more creepy men out there, but he's not like a shining green flag, you know?
That's true. There is worse. There are people with more red flags, but he's enough. Yeah. I think that's it that I have for the story.
I think so, too. Okay. Should we rate it?
All right. I would say let's rate it out of 5 Cyclops eyes, but there's only one. Okay. Out of 5 online dates, what do you rate You Can Find Love Now?
I think I'd give it like a solid 3.9. I enjoyed it. I thought it was funny. But yeah, I think that there were some choices that maybe I didn't love overall.
Okay. I think I'm going to go with 3.5.
Okay.
I liked it. Not my favorite. Not the worst I've ever read. I think not having any dialogue was different enough that I noticed it.
Uh-huh.
Which I thought was an interesting choice to just have the inner monologue of him filling out an online dating form.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I don't know. I kind of hoped it was going to be funnier.
That's fair. I guess I had fewer expectations going into this. You had said it was going to be funny, but I didn't really read anything about it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have to look up my source that told me that this is going to be a series of funny comedic stories.
Be nonetheless.
I mean, I would definitely categorize it at least off of this one as like fantasy and that kind of thing, but I don't know if I would consider it a comedy specifically yet. Maybe we'll see in the next couple stories.
Yeah. I mean, it might, yeah, also just be more like dark humor as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay, so for the second short story, which we'll read in a couple weeks, actually, it'll be a little while, but that's fine.
4 weeks, yeah.
Yeah. It's fine. The next one I'm going to pick is called Club Zeus. And okay. I believe it is in the third segment, which is in Lonesome Flats. I think it's like 30 pages, so it's longer than the first one for sure. But okay. Zeus.
And I'm excited that we're going to read Frankenstein. I've got both the digital copy, and I think I found the audiobook as well. So I'm excited to start that.
By Mary Shelley.
Yes. Yeah. Very excited.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Marianne and Wanda. We would love to hear your feedback and if you have any books or topics for us to review.
You can reach us at Marianne and Wanda Podcast on Instagram or send us an email at Marianne and Wanda Podcast @gmail.com. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.